Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Oh, yes, indeed. Look at that. I've counted to four, so I won't even need to edit this later. So we have a consummate BBC broadcasting professional legend in the Good Listening To Clearing. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome Adam Crowther?
Morning. Hi, Chris. Thank you.
Good morning. And by the way, you are a legend because your upload, which is how one can get one's stuff noticed, seen, played on the BBC, was your brainchild. And I think it's the most wonderfully generous thing.
Yeah, I mustn't take full credit. It was a bit of my boss, Jess, as well. So I say a lot of my boss, Jess. So, yeah, it was an interesting concept that sort of came about sort of about 5 years or so ago, that Jess started knocking it around as a bit of an idea. And then I had a bit of a chat with her one day about sort of how people can get featured more on the BBC and things like that. And yeah, so together we sort of put our heads together and thought, this could work, couldn't it? And here we are again, sort of all these years later.
And I love the fact that it's been seeded across the BBC, you know, England, Scotland, Wales. If you're a blogger, a comedian, a writer, you know, however you want to get your stuff noticed and seen and played. And by the way, we have my lovely friend, Stephanie Weston, who is my instant wit. Yeah, she's the proper boss with an instant wit. you've featured her lots of times, I know. So she speaks very highly and warmly of you, too.
I speak very highly and warmly of her as well, because she's just the most incredible and charismatic of comedy voices, I think, within Bristol. She's just got such a dry sense of humour, which I love. And it seems that no matter what she does, whatever she sends in, she does it with such brilliance that I love it. Every time I see her name pop up on the upload, I'm like, yes, here's another one. Great.
Boom. And I'm so happy for her that she's getting the success she deserves for her writing. And indeed, as you say, her dry sense of humour. She's been a comic foil of joy to me for the last 25, aging us both, sorry, Steph, with Instant Wit, which is the comedy improvisation company, which is here in Bristol too. So just to throw a bit of extra smoke at you, your whole presenting career has been about promoting new talent. I think you're a great galvaniser, encourager of new talent. And I think that's just a really wonderful disposition to have as a broadcaster.
Yeah, I think for me is that I know that from the early days of my career within radio, I loved being supported by other people who were really willing to give me a leg up in my career. So I think that's really helped shape the sort of broadcaster that I am too, and that I just love championing new talent, whether that's sort of new presenters. We've just had a batch of new presenters do some takeover shifts with BBC Upload, or whether that's the people that we champion on Upload, indeed the people who submit stuff. And before that, I presented for BBC Introducing, which does the same sort of thing, but for musicians. I used to work at BBC Radio Shropshire doing that. And very early on in my presenting career, before I even got into radio, I used to host gifted and talented showcases for the city of Birmingham, and the council would hire me to sort of come and present these showcases where kids with the most amazing talents from right the way across the city would come together once a year for this amazing showcase that we held in the city of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra Centre, right in the heart of Birmingham. So even when I was sort of 15, 16, 17, I was always championing new talent. So I think it sort of stuck with me since then, really.
You're a bit of a Simon Cowell with lower trousers, shall we say, in terms of encouraging X Factor and new talent.
A lot lower pay as well, I should point out.
but really, a sincere thank you. Here in Bristol, it's just a wonderful thing to have Upload. The Upload Festival is on the down sporadically as well. I just know that it's great to have someone who's so encouraging to new talent. Also, you're very versatile. You've just been overseeing a disused or reconditioned oil rig being craned and winched into the Tropicana. That's something you were doing just last week, I think.
Yeah, so on my show that I was doing at BBC Radio Bristol, a colleague of mine was down here in Weston. So I'm in Weston Supermare at the moment, I live just a couple of streets back from the seafront. And I was on air as the whole crane lifted in Sea Monster, an old, I've got to correct you, Chris, it's not an oil rig, because I kept getting told off because it's not an oil rig, it's a North Sea rig, an offshore rig. So, but it never dealt with oil. So it helped support the rigging of gas, I think.
Uh-huh.
It was no way connected with oil. So I have to correct everyone that says it, because otherwise I get into trouble too. It's not oil. But funny enough, I can see out of my flat window the top of the new Sea Monster installation. So I'm quite excited for it to be fully open a little later on this year.
So it's going to become a Sea Monster installation at the Tropicana and Western Supermare.
Yeah, and we're really excited for BBC Radio Bristol to be able to be doing some bits of partnership stuff. I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to say yet, but we're hoping a little later on that we'll be able to do some fantastic opportunities to see behind the scenes of Sea Monster later on this year.
And thank you for that clarification. Not so much rig schmig, as very specifically, it was an ex-gas functioning rig. Wonderful.
Yeah.
And also, BBC Upload 7 till 10 each weekday is your mothership show. You've done some, there are some takeover stuff where you're encouraging new talent. You've also been in the afternoon slot. I saw something whereby you were doing a social media thing about comparing, there was an ice cream off, which three ice creams will take the longest to melt in the sunshine?
Yeah, a bit of ridiculousness on the radio, I think, always goes really well, Chris. So, yeah, I covered the afternoon drive programme on Monday during the heatwave. So I thought, what can I do to throw a bit of calamity into the mix here on the heatwave, where everyone sort of course, some people are a bit anxious about how hot it was going to get. We were sort of nearing the top end of the 30s, weren't we? So it was quite nice to sort of throw a bit of chaos and relaxation. And the one thing that I thought was, oh, if you're out in this heat, which ice cream is going to be the best to have? Because you don't want it dribbling all down your hand as you're eating your ice cream or ice lolly or whatever. So I sent Alex, who was producing me that day, I was like, Alex, here you go. Here's some broadcast gear. Go and walk up to the local shop and go and see what ice creams you can get for a tenner. And we'll see which one melts the slowest. So that completely unscientific science on BBC Radio Bristol. What more could you want?
You can't have it dribbling all down your hand. Fantastic. No. So what we're going to do, if I may, and very, very welcome, is I'm going to curate you through the journey of the Good Listening To show. There is the clearing, a tree. There's going to be a lovely, juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And I've got, you know, a bit of a backdrop to sort of help you through here. Storytelling apples. How'd you like them apples? There's Shakespeare hiding in the trees as well. And a couple of random squirrels and a cake. So it's all to play for. So, Adam Crowther, BBC Bristol broadcasting legend, let's get you on the open road. What is a clearing like for you energetically? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
Well, I'm really lucky in that I live right near the seafront, and I haven't always lived near the sea. In fact, I grew up in Birmingham, probably as far from the sea as you could get in the UK. But I sort of take great comfort in being by the seaside. I went to uni in Aberystwyth and lived right near the sea. So if ever I needed to sort of just go, I need 5 minutes to clear my head, I would go and sit on the beach, which was at the end of my street. And now I live in Western Supermare. At the end of my street, I've got the very nice, quiet end of Western Supermare Beach. And so I quite like being by the sea or by water. I find it very calming. And so here in Western, there's a really nice sort of outcrop of rocks just off from the Marine Lake as you walk round towards Birnbeck Pier. And just as the sun sets, it's really nice to sit on the rocks, watch the sunset, waves lapping in when the tide's actually in at Western, and just sort of take in the view, the atmosphere, and just have a breather. So for me, anywhere near the sea or near water is just so calming, I think.
And I love the atmospheric touch there of it being at sunset on those rocks just round the corner from the pier at Western Supermare. Very lovely and specific.
There's something really calming about a nice orange sky, isn't there, I think? And sort of it helps you to feel like you're grounded. It helps you to feel like you're at peace, I think, when the sun's setting and when you're by the sea. And I'm not a very spiritual person by any means, but something quite nice about just feeling,
Yes. There's a generosity and warmth in the sunset and a generosity and warmth in you, just to blow a bit of smoke at you.
Yeah. So and I don't think I always get to see the sun either, because I'm usually locked in a studio when the sun's setting. So I don't always get to see it. So when I do, I like to absorb it as much as I can.
Nicely done. I'm now going to arrive with a tree then at your clearing. And this is a bit Waiting for Godot-esque because of my acting background. I'm going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. How do you like these apples? And this is the 5-4-3-2-1 exercise now. We've had 5 minutes, Adam Crowther, to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up. That's the squirrels. You know, what are the monsters of distraction? What are your squirrels? And then a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us. So into the canopy of your tree. You don't have to do it in a wanna, but how would you like to interpret that exercise?
I think that I like to sort of go through the bits and pieces as we can through the numbers. Let's go for it, shall we?
Yes, let's do the math. So over to you.
So I think that the things that shape me is a really interesting one, because I know you said to think of no longer than 5 minutes, but I think I spent 5 minutes just on this one, to be honest, Chris, because the things that have shaped me over the years, of course, have been the amazing teachers that I would have had at school. And I think that you had Keith Warmington on this podcast a few weeks back, and he said that, you know, we're being constantly shaped, aren't we? So there are lots of different things, which I think is incredibly wise of him to say, because I was like, actually, he's so right. We're shaped every day we meet someone new or anything like that. But I think the key things that have shaped me over the years, number one has got to be my parents. They're the most kind, supportive, loving parents ever. Not too hands-on. They're not sort of pushy or anything like that. They're there whenever I need them. They're the most amazing human beings, and they're both so laid back. My mum particularly is so laid back. She's practically horizontal at all times. But yeah, my parents are the ones who I think have shaped me the most, and they've helped to keep me as a nice, rounded and hopefully warm and open-hearted person. So yeah, my parents are the number one that have shaped me, I think.
Do they have any broadcasting DNA to them?
Not in the slightest. Yeah, my dad's a plumber and has been since he was a teenager. So, you know, he spent a good sort of 45 years or so as a plumber. He's self-employed. And my mum has done all sorts of work over the years. She's done bits of admin work, and then latterly she's a cleaner, and now she's fully retired. So yeah, no broadcasting or presenting or musical or creative sort of things for them at all, really.
Although Pearl's a singer and Dad's a plumber, there could be a song in there somewhere.
There could be a song there somewhere, yeah. I guess the second thing that's helped to shape me over the years has 100% been my work, whether that be in radio, in broadcasting, in the shows that I've presented. But also before that, I used to be a youth worker. So in a previous career, I was a youth worker, and sort of it sort of helped to shape the way that I feel that different voices of all backgrounds should be heard, because I think I was really keen on doing that when I was doing youth work. You know, I think that quite often that the media can tell certain people's voices more than others, or share other people's voices more than others, and that tends to be those who already have a voice, those who are very wealthy and well off, or quite in the middle classes. And quite often the sort of working class folk, or people from the sort of suburbs that perhaps people don't particularly like visiting too often, those are the voices that don't get told that often. So I love to be able to do that, I think. And so, yeah, my work, whether it be youth work or radio, has been the things that's helped shape me too.
So the idea of just sort of taking a microphone into places where other places don't go, if you like, to get the voices heard.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, just being able to sort of speak in a way that isn't the too sort of hoity-toity or up our own backside. I think I'm a big advocate for that. And I think during the pandemic, I was presenting a four-hour show during the pandemic, which also included sort of a news hour at the start of my programme. And quite often the prime ministerial or the number 10 Downing Street conferences would happen, and they'd finish just before 6 o'clock as I was due on air. And so I would be furiously note-taking during those conferences, thinking they're all talking in such jargon and garbage that none of us normal folk really understand all that well. So I guess I felt like it was my duty to try and make those things make sense to people in a really human way. And I do that with a lot of what I do. You know, I don't speak on air in too flowery language. I try and keep it really accessible for people to listen to, regardless of who you are, where you're listening to, what sort of education you have, whether you're employed or not employed, you should be able to access information. So I'm a big advocate for that. One of the other things that shapes me, Chris, is I am somewhat the perfectionist. I know that from the look of my sofa and the cushions behind me, it might not look like that. But when it comes to my work and what I do, I'm so anal about the way that things get done. Things have to be done in a certain way. They have to be scripted in a certain way. I have to have things laid out in a certain way. And it was summed up for me the other day by my boss. And we were talking about different skill sets that some of us within the team have. And I love video editing. It's one of the things that I absolutely adore doing. And particularly, I take stress but pride when I get to create little graphics and overlays and things like that. And I love it because it sort of plays to my perfectionism in that I have to make sure that everything's precise and right and shapes are okay and all that sort of stuff. And she said, the reason you like that is because you're a perfectionist. And I thought, am I a perfectionist? Yeah, actually. And I never really thought of myself as that before. But the more I've thought about it over the last couple of weeks, the more I've thought, yeah, maybe that is what has shaped quite a lot of me in the way that I do stuff, is that I'm so like, the details really matter.
And you're obviously very good at not being scripted too, because we are here on the open road of just letting our thinking unfold. And it doesn't sound like, I mean, it doesn't sound like you're at all shaken by this just being a let your thinking unfold, obviously.
Yeah, no. And I think that's a really important skill when you work in radio, because you genuinely never know what's going to be thrown at you next from, you know, something happening within the city centre of Bristol. You know, I look at some of my colleagues who were on air when the Colston statue in Bristol got brought down. And of course, that was big news for Bristol, but it was huge global news. The world was talking about the city of Bristol that day. And so, you know, I look at some of my colleagues and the way they reacted to stuff like that. I was on air when Boris Johnson got taken into intensive care during the pandemic and having to react to that, there's no script for stuff like that. No one knows what happens. I don't think any serving prime minister in well over 100 odd years has ever been admitted to anything like intensive care while being a serving prime minister. So there is genuinely no script format of what happens and how people are going to react. So you sort of have to be free flowing a lot of the time. And although I do like a script sorts, it tends to be quite basic in notes, and I talk around stuff. And so I never really script things to the nth degree. I sort of put bullet points and talk around it. And I think that sort of helps you to be able to speak freely, creatively, and also be able to deal with stuff when it gets thrown at you. Because quite often producers will say, here's some notes on what's happening, and it's very, you know, a couple of lines, and then you have to take it on from there. So,
and by the way, people are very quick to have an opinion too, aren't they, about stuff that happens. I still run a comedy group called hashtag LOLvirus, and when the Colston statue came down, within moments there was a meme in the group which was the punchline of harboring a well-known criminal
went
sloshing into the water. I thought it was incredibly quick.
See, comedy minds just think differently, don't they? I like it.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Wonderful. So we're still there within the foliage of the shapeage, I think, or we might actually now be at the inspiring stuff, but back to you.
Yeah. So this next one was sort of, you mentioned about that sort of crossover, Chris, and that sometimes you might have some shaped and some inspired and they might cross over. And this next one is sort of those broadcasters that I used to love listening to when I was growing up, because I think they've definitely helped shape the way that I present the way that I consume radio too. So I love listening to different people on the radio, but I have a list of people that have been the people that I've loved listening to on the radio over the years. And the earliest person that I can remember, and he'll hate me for saying this because he's now a colleague of mine, is a guy called Phil Upton. He works at BBC Radio CWR in Coventry and Warwickshire. And I used to listen to him back in the days on the old commercial station in Birmingham called BRMB, which is an absolute legendary radio station in the world of commercial radio here in the UK. And I remember listening to him on BRMB when I was a kid and just being fascinated by the way that radio worked and how slick it could be and how he sort of used things like his jingles, his sort of imaging packages, and how he sort of spoke up and over the intros up to the vocals and stuff. And I remember thinking, wow, this is a real skill. I'd love to do this at some point. And he then moved on to the different radio stations. And I, funnily enough, ended up being a traffic and travel reporter for around 4 years. That was my sort of first professional radio gig. And I ended up being Phil's travel reporter when he was presenting Drive on BBC CWR then. And it was really, I sort of was like first shift in this new travel show, and sort of sitting there with my script in the studio opposite Phil Upton, who I'd been listening to for years as a kid. So, you know, people like Phil Upton, Zane Lowe, and Annie Mack, Hugh Stevens, all those champions of new talent too, from Radio One and now on Six Music with Hugh Stevens too, all incredible, incredible broadcasters who I think have both shaped and inspired me to both get into radio, but also shape the way that I see myself as a broadcaster. So that's a bit of a crossover one. I'm cheating a bit with that one, if that's
no. But how lovely that you get to work with your heroes, and as you say, he's become a colleague now. That's wonderful.
Yeah, really, really great. And I sometimes don't know if he realizes how much of an impact he's had on me on my radio journey and career, because it's sort of one of those things that when you meet someone like that for the first time, you sort of go, oh, hi, Phil, how are you? Yeah, great. Yeah, cheers, great. And then we've spoken a few times since, and I bumped into him a few months back and sort of said, how are you? How's it going? And it was when we were doing some filming for the Upload Festival, actually, in Coventry. And we had a real good 5-10 minute catch up. Just about how each other's jobs are going, how's life's going. And so it's sort of like, I've never really sat down and said, do you know, Phil, you're probably one of the reasons that I got into radio. But now I'm sure he'll find out, and he'll be blushing, no doubt.
Well, I'm very flattered and honoured that you've used this moment to give him the amplification he deserves. Fantastic. And Phil Upton, big shout out for him.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He's
really, you're being really very great. Generous, by the way, because you also were very generous about Stephanie Weston, who I call she is a super mayor, even though she's not.
She's brilliant, is Stephanie. One of the other things that inspires me then on my list, Chris, is quite sort of self-indulgently is myself, because I know. And I thought, do I go with this one? Am I going to look like a bit of a something if I come out with this? But I thought, do you know what, I'm just going to do it, because there's the one thing that I think that we all are guilty of is we all sort of lay sort of the credit of inspiration at other people's doors sometimes, don't we? But the only person that's going to inspire you to get out of bed every day, to go and do the things you do every day and sort of be the success that you can be, is yourself a lot of the time. And
you know what? That's so lovely. Sorry to interrupt you. You're the first guest in 119 episodes now, and I love that. I completely relate to it. One of your great inspirers is yourself.
It's because I'm a secret narcissist.
No, but that's really wonderful.
I think it's because when I think about some of the opportunities that I've had to forge for myself and some of the things that I've sort of been through in terms of personal self-belief over the years, you know, when I think about the first meeting that I had with someone from within the BBC about potentially getting some work, it was, I won't mention their name because I've had this conversation with them before, and they're like, I can't make it sound like I was evil, which this person absolutely wasn't. But I went in for a coffee with a sort of an assistant manager at a radio station in the Midlands to try and have a bit of a, oh, can I come and do some work for you, please? And as a freelancer, please, that'd be all right. And I remember sitting down with them, having this coffee at the BBC, and someone, and she was asking me about the sort of things that I'd done. And the sort of things that they do at the radio station. And so, oh, if we could perhaps get you to come in and maybe sort of answer some phone calls and then take those sort of messages from people and relay them to the presenter. Is that something you think you could do? Oh, I'm not sure on that, really. I'd be a bit worried about and all this sort of stuff. And so, okay, well, how about if we sent you out with some recording gear and got you to go and speak to some people on the street about their opinions on whatever's on the news that week, some vox pops, as we call them. And I said, oh, I don't know about speaking to people out on the street. And, oh, okay, I'm not sure about that. Right. Well, how about doing some sort of technical stuff and sort of driving, we call them driving the desk, doing the faders and sort of helping the technicals of a radio show work. Oh, I'm not really sure about that. And so she went through a few different further scenarios and then said, Adam, come on. I know you can do all this stuff because you've done bat. I've researched you before you've got here. You've done all these things. And you come here and tell me you can't do those. Go away. Come back next week. We'll have the same coffee and the same chat, but I want your answers to be different.
Lovely.
Okay. Right. Okay. And because I never had that confidence in myself on my ability and what I could do. And I'd sort of got myself into a situation where I was trying to talk myself into work at the BBC. And I always felt like the BBC was one of those things that it was like the holy grail of places to work, because I'd loved sort of broadcasting. I've loved the sort of world of media for so long. I used to live right down the road from BBC Pebble Mill, and Children in Need Night used to see the searchlights going from the top of Pebble Mill from my home. And so it's one of those places that's always been in my consciousness and always wanted to work at since being a teenager. And suddenly I was in the BBC having a coffee with a boss who could potentially give me work. And all my self-confidence was through the floor. It wasn't there at all. So I had to learn quite quickly to be my own advocate and be my own drum banger, if you will. So, yes. So that's why I picked myself, I guess, Chris.
And I love the fact that they nudged you to the territory of self-advocacy. I give myself permission, because if we don't give ourselves permission, nobody else is going to do that for you.
100%. And I think that when I think about some of the things that I've done that have been perhaps a little ballsy in my career, in terms of, you know, I've done some really interesting broadcasting firsts. You know, I was a social media producer for the BBC and helped sort of overturn some of the social media strategy that now exists within the BBC right the way across England, and went and headed up the BBC Breakfast social media team for a bit and overhauled them. Really tough challenges, but I sort of thought, do you know what, I've just got to get on and do this, because, and I gave myself those pep talks all the time. It was never sort of too much of other people. I sort of go and ask a bit of advice, but usually it's me going, right, come on, 2 feet, let's go.
Interestingly, you didn't credit by name the person that nudged you into self-advocacy. You don't have to, but that was quite interesting that you avoided saying their name. But it sounds like they were incredibly powerful as an influencer to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the reason that I don't is because I've mentioned this and mentioned their name before. And having spoken to them since, like, when you told that story about the coffee that we had, it made me seem like I was quite evil, going, go away, come back next week. Whereas actually what she did was incredibly sort of powerful. It was humbling to me at the time. Yes. I remember sort of walking out going, oh my God, I've ruined this now. But the next week coming back and thinking, do you know what? That is the best thing that she could have done for me, because it helped me to change my thinking on the way that I sell myself, the way that I speak about myself, the way that I sort of empower myself and sort of champion my own skill set. So yeah, incredibly grateful to them. And they know that. They do know that.
And whoever they are, it is couched as a wonderfully positive, nudging, proactive story to just change your whole mindset, actually. It changed your behavior. And ever since then, you've been your own best self-advocate.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I do owe a lot to her, and she knows that. She does know that, I promise.
And I'll just ask you one more time. Are you sure you don't want to say their name? Because it's a great thing, actually.
I'm positive, only because I think that the sort of the nudge that she gave me before of like, I make me feel so evil. I wouldn't want to do that to her again.
I'm getting a bit Hong Kong Fu now. Who is this superhero? Is it Sarge? Could be. Hong Kong Fu. So whoever it was did a great thing to nudge you into that place. Wonderful. Okay, so we could still be in influencing, or now we could be on to, what do you think, squirrels?
Yeah, let's go for squirrels. Let's go for it.
So what are the, what two things never fail to grab your attention, irrespective of anything else that's going on for you, Adam?
Two things, Chris. I absolutely love, so I've got a good and a bad here. So my good thing is I just love that when I hear something, and I really enjoy it. So what I talk about here is a bit like I said earlier with the stuff that whenever I see Stephanie's name on the uploader, your colleague, I love seeing Stephanie's name on the uploader because I know I'm going to put my headphones on and I'm going to listen to whatever she sent in and I'm going to enjoy listening to it because it's going to be great. In the same way that if I get a new name on the uploader and I hit play to listen to what they've sent in, and within the first 10, 15 seconds of hearing something, you know if it's going to be good because there's something about it that, that really grabs you in. And that, for me, is something that I can sort of go, oh, wow. And my sort of whole thing sits up and my sort of head sort of twitches to one side and I go, oh, this has caught my attention. This is really great. So when I hear something really that's really creative, something that really grabs me in terms of the way that it sounds, the way that it makes me feel, the way that it's been put together and produced, I love that. So that's my sort of guilty pleasure, is when I'm on the uploader is hearing something that's like, oh, that's great. So that's
what
never
fails.
Is that
a yin and a yang where it can go one of two ways? You're either going to get hooked or lost, I suppose.
Yeah. And I think that, to be fair to the people that send stuff in to me on the uploader, I listen to absolutely everything that gets sent in. So I never dismiss anything straight off, but there are certain things that perhaps you know straight away are going to be amazing. And in the same breath, you know, we do get stuff that you sort of listen to and you think, this isn't quite right or isn't quite ready to go on the radio. And we always try where we can to sort of help guide people back onto the right track. So it's never like a complete dismissal straight off at all by any stretch. But
and there's your lovely thread of inclusivity there and trying to be inclusive to voices that otherwise wouldn't be heard through the vehicle of upload, which, again, you know, between you and your boss is or your ex-boss or current boss is a great initiative, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And it's incredible that we're able to do that. So, that's my good sort of grab my attention. But my bad, and I'm sure that plenty of people will agree with me on this, or perhaps won't have noticed, and now I'm going to ruin their lives because they're going to notice it everywhere they go, are really crap cliches. And you get these quite a lot, both on radio and on TV. And this all started with me, my old colleague Verity, who now presents on BFBF Breakfast, so the British Forces Radio Breakfast Show. There's a duo, Hatch and Greer, they present together, and Verity Gear is the lady who I used to work with at BBC Radio Bristol, and she said, "I don't know whether you've ever noticed, but there's those really crap cliches that you get on the telly all the time, and they're always in reports where it rounds off, and it's really just lazy journalism, is that presenters or reporters at the end of a report will say something along the lines of, and will Chris ever get to eat his cake? The future remains to be seen. The future remains to be seen. I hate it. Or only time will tell. It makes my skin crawl. It's just such a lazy, lazy round off. I hate it.
I like that. So it's a squirrel of frustration.
Yeah, crap cliches. Because as soon as I hear them, I'm like, oh, and it grabs my attention in the complete wrong way. And not just on TV reports either. We also get them on radio. So that whole, and joining me now, or, and I just hate them. I really hate them. You know, the sort of things that you listen to and you think there's no need for you to put that in. It's sloppy. Get it out. And I guess that also plays to that thing of my perfectionism coming back again, because I'm like, that's not perfect. Stop it.
So sloppy, the cliche squirrel is what we've just called them.
Yeah. So things that are great really grab my attention, but crap cliches also are bad and grab my attention in the wrong way.
And now we're up to a quirky or unusual fact in the end of the 54321. A quirky or unusual fact about you, Adam Crowther, we couldn't know unless you tell us.
Yeah. So this is one that I sort of, I think some people might know it, but not everyone will. But I once, when I was 16 years old, made Tony Blair a cup of tea while he was the Prime Minister.
Boom. So, and where were you? Obviously, Downing Street, or he'd come via the BBC? Where were you?
No, so it was when I was 16 and I was at sixth form, which was attached to my old secondary school. So it was sort of a sixth form college that was part of my old school. I went to Bourneville School in Birmingham, right next to the Cadbury factory. And our school had a head teacher who was working, looking after us as a secondary school, but was sort of seen as this amazing head teacher. And she was really, really great. She was brilliant. Her name was Ruth Harker, and incredibly supportive of me and the stuff that I did very early on my career. And she was also looking after a neighboring school. And so Tony Blair had come to talk about education strategy, but also have a tour of the building and do a sort of ribbon cutting on a sort of refurbished building that had been done up and all this sort of stuff. And the day before, I got sort of dragged into the head teacher's office with a couple of the senior leadership team. And my heart sank because, when you're and I was quite cheeky at school. I was never a bad kid, but I'd love a wind up when I was a kid. I'd wind up with a few of the teachers and schoolmates and stuff like that. But I always did all right at school. And I thought, oh, what have I done? Have I pushed something too far here? And then I walk into this room and there's the head teacher, the assistant head, the deputy head, someone from the chair of governors, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. And they're like, we've got a very important job for you to do. And I thought, oh, here we go. We can't tell you what it is, but you need to walk around with this man and he's going to take you on a route. And then tomorrow you're going to have to walk that route with a very special guest, but we can't tell you who it is. And I'm thinking, what? So we had to walk around with this man who was talking into his sleeve the whole time and said, move that bin. Those blinds have to be closed. That door has to be locked. This one can't be open. That one. And then I next day turn up and I was told to get suited and tied and all this sort of business, which I never did because I was a bit of a sort of an indie kid at school. So I was always jeans and a checked t-shirt or whatever. And then Tony Blair turns up to sort of have this tour of the building. And I also sang in a big band. So we had to do this performance of a big band song that we did and blah, blah, blah. And then I had to be the guide that took him around the school and introduced him to different teachers and into different classrooms that were having lessons and stuff. And then he went and sat down to have this meeting to talk strategy with the head teacher. And as I took him into the room, the head of sixth form at the time was a guy called Brian Platts. He was a brilliant head of year and head of sixth form for us. He said, so Mr. Blair, can we get you a tea or a coffee or anything? He said, oh, I'd love a cup of tea, please. And he said, right, Adam, go make Tony Blair a cup of tea. I'm like, what? The burly guy who was talking into his sleeve, the security guy, came and stood over my shoulder. And I've never felt so intimidated making a cup of tea in all my life as this big 6 foot tall strapping guy, really mean looking bloke.
Well, really looking at the tea as to whether you're going to lace it with something.
yeah, properly watched me the whole time I made this tea. And I remember walking back with his mug of tea, shaking so like violently because I was like, I'm so nervous. But yeah, so that's my little claim to fame that I sang and then made a cup of tea for Tony Blair.
And you could have heard the education in three rooms away. You talked about education.
Basically, yeah, yes. Exactly that.
We have shaken your tree and now we stay in the clearing. We move away from the tree and we're going to talk about alchemy and gold now, Adam Crowther. And again, if there's any overlap, because what you've been giving us is alchemy and gold by the bucket load anyway. But when you're at purpose and in flow, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
I am never happier than when I'm just talking and having conversations with people and finding out about them. So a bit like you're doing with me now, Chris, is that that's the thing that I love doing in reverse, I guess, is that I love finding out about people. I've got such a curious mind and I love being able to find out more about people. And particularly when I'm doing stuff for radio is that I love being able to pull on a thread that someone has and pull more out of them in a way that perhaps they never thought they'd be able to do or wouldn't realize that it's something that people would be interested in. So they don't always tell us. So if I find out a little thread of information about someone that I think, oh, that's good, I'll just keep sort of tugging at it very gently until they start unraveling a bit. And it's like, okay, that's it. We've got the story. Keep going, keep going, keep coming. Because I love finding out those bits and pieces about people that help spark interest, not just in them, but in others too, who might be listening and might think, oh, wow, that's something that I could perhaps do. Or that's something that I wish I could have the opportunity to talk about. Or I wish I'd have said something about that, like that person did. And so, yeah, I think that's what I love doing is finding out other things about other people and meeting and finding out all what they've got to offer without them necessarily even realizing that that's what they're doing.
That's made me think of unraveling a golden cardigan as you get the golden thread to start unraveling.
100%. Yeah. And everyone's got their own golden cardigan, whether they realize it or not. Everyone's got that story. I'm a big advocate in that, as I mentioned earlier, that everyone's got a voice. Everyone's got a story to tell. They might not necessarily realize it. And I think that the thing that sparked that for me, I did a really fascinating course with the BBC years and years and years ago. It was called Journalism Foundation, which sadly doesn't exist in the same sort of format anymore. But there was a group of about 15 of us, new journalists, who all went to the BBC in White City, where Television Centre was or is now again. And there's a broadcast centre just next door to Television Centre that the BBC still has a bit of a presence in. And we all sat in these training rooms and they said, right, here's a notebook and pen. You've got half an hour. Off you go. Go and find some stories by speaking to people on the street. And we're like, what, half an hour? Well, that's no time to go and find our story. And I went up and spoke to this guy who was stood in the sort of entrance to a big building site. He was one of these sort of high-vis, stood at the checking for the lorries. Is this what this is coming yet? Yeah, that's one of them. Okay, and you come. And I said, so what's your story? And managed to find out about, he was an Eastern European chap, and he'd managed when he was a kid to discover in an old abandoned sort of crypt of a church that he used to do like youth like club setting sort of sessions in when he was a kid. He used to go to this youth club in a church. He managed to go down into this crypt that was all blocked off and boarded off, snuck off from the main youth club, and ended up rediscovering the bones of an old Polish royal type person. I think memory doesn't serve me too well, but I remember thinking, wow, you found the bones of an old king of wherever it was that you were from. And I was like, that is a story just from chatting to one bloke in half an hour. There we go. That's a joy. So everyone's got a story. You've just got to put it out of them.
And it's spotting the high vis, because that was a nice clue. I'll speak to him. He's got a high visibility story going on there.
I think it was like, oh, quick, he's the nearest bloke to where I'm working. Let's go. And I went to a few people first on the street who were sort of walking around. And this is my top tip for any journalists that are going out there and hate doing what we call vox pops, where you go out onto the street and ask people their opinion on stuff, is that if people are walking, they won't stop. Or you'll have to be really, really lucky to get them to stop. The trick is go and speak to people who are standing still or can't escape you. So that guy was never going to move because he's got a gate to guard, right? So I'm like, right, you'll do. So always stop the people.
That's a great tip.
Already stopped.
How to vox pop, go for those that are still.
Yeah, exactly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Lovely. So now I'm going to award you with a cake. And this is the final storytelling metaphor. It's a multi-layered cake where you get to put a cherry on the cake. But first of all, Adam, do you like cake?
I blinking love cake. Chris, look at me. I'm not really gym physique, let's put it that way. But yeah, I do love cake, and I don't eat cake as much as I used to when I was a kid. And I think that sort of comes onto this next bit where you're going to ask me what my favourite cakes are. But yeah, I do love a good cake.
And so you can go for cake of choice. This is a metaphorical cake, tragically. Nor do you get it splotched in your face in slapstick style. But what cake are we talking before I tell you about the cherry to put on the cake?
So there's one of two cakes that I really like, right? And so the first one has got to be forever and will always be my nan's chocolate cake. She makes a mean chocolate cake, does my nan, and she makes cakes for every... It's like her ongoing mission in life. This is her only mission, is to feed people at all occasions with chocolate cake. And she makes such an amazing cake. Whenever you're around there, she's like... Here you go, I've made you a cake. Yes. And it's always like, yes, good, I've got Nan's chocolate cake. So yeah, that's definitely a favourite. Or I'm a sucker for a lemon drizzle.
Oh.
And Yeah, the sort of lemon drizzle I'm talking here, Chris, is not the sort of stuff that you can get shop bought. It's got to be the sort of lemon drizzle cake that you'll get maybe in like a National Trust cafe or somewhere like that. You know the sort? And it's absolutely smothered with that lovely sort of lemony icing on the top. Oh,
we're torn now. We've got your dad's chocolate cake or a National Trust lemon drizzle. So let's get caught between the two. So nom, 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 nom. Now, in that hybrid cake, in this hybrid New World Order in which we now pervade, you get to put a cherry on the cake. And this now takes the form of what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given? What's a favorite inspirational quote that's always given you succor and pulled you towards your future? What notes, help, or advice might you offer to a younger version of yourself? And finally, then we arrive at Shakespeare. He's in the trees as well, as you can see. And inspired by All the World's a Stage and All the Men and Women Merely Players, the Seven Ages of Man / Woman's Speech, we'll talk about legacy and how, when all is said and done, you'd most like to be remembered.
Yes, good one. Okay, right. So let's get with the best or the inspirational quote. And the one that I'm going to pull out here is from Dr. Seuss. And I love Dr. Seuss because ridiculous, like really great fun, just a bit of silliness. And that's what I really, really like about Dr. Seuss. But also always harbors quite an interesting message, I think. And so the inspirational quote that I've gone for is taken from Happy Birthday to You, and I've written it down here. So today you are you, that is truer than true. There is no one alive who is youer than you. And I think that is one of the most poignant things, I think. And you are you. There is no one going to be you better than you are. So just blink and get on with it. And so that's what I love about that quote.
Very relatable. I love Dr. Seuss as well. Fox in Socks and Other Stories is my very favourite book that I read to Stan over the years, and it got to the point where I enjoyed reading it to him more than he enjoyed listening to it.
Yeah, but it's brilliant, and the rhymes in it are great. And I directed the first Welsh production, not in the Welsh language, but the first production in Wales of the musical, Seuss Called the Musical.
Wow.
Yeah.
And by the way, just give us that lovely quote again. It's worth reincorporating for a third time. It's wonderful.
Today, you are you. That is truer than true. There is no one alive who is youer than you.
Lovely.
It's nice.
And now we move on to what's next in your multi-layered hybrid cake.
Best piece of advice. And so this harks a bit back to that coffee that I had at the BBC, I guess, in a way, but it's not exactly that that bit of advice of go back and come back again, but it's sort of related to that. And it's a quote from the film Ray that stars Jamie Foxx as Ray Charles. And I adore jazz music, and I really, really admire Ray as a person, as a musician. He's been through so much adversity, through addiction, to dealing with being blind, to being an innovator in music, in R&B and jazz, and had a lot of naysayers in the early days. And so I think that I sometimes can sort of think, I can have a bit of that. Sometimes you get a bit of people that go, oh, are you right for this? And then you prove them wrong, which I quite like. But it's actually a quote that's from the film, and I never know whether his mum genuinely said that this quote, but in the film she did. Aretha Robinson said, just as Ray was going blind, there's a beautiful scene where she's helping him to rediscover how he can navigate around the house in the wooden hut that they lived in. And she says, I'll show you how to do something once. I'll help you if you mess up twice. But the third time, you're on your own, because that's the way it is in the world. And I think that's quite, in some ways, a quite downbeat bit of advice, because you're thinking, oh, well, so at some point I'm going to be on my own in the world. Okay. But also I'm sort of, okay, you've shown me, you've helped me, and now I've got to crack on and do it. So it's a bit more of that can do, let's just get on with it type thing.
No, I love that. And the Ray Charles version, by the way, of Oh, What a Beautiful Morning is one of my favourite sort of jazz tracks, actually.
Yeah, I think my favourite Ray Charles track of all time has got to be Georgia. It's just something so beautiful about his vocal in that. And it's such an understated track, isn't it? It's not one of his big, massive sort of upbeat production. It's not a mess around or hit the road, Jack, or anything like that. But I just love the sort of beauty in the sentiment of Georgia on my mind.
Perfect. Lovely. Just allowing a bit of pause there. Lovely. And then we might be at the Shakespeare point now, unless there's other stuff. I mean, please interpret your cake as you like.
Yeah. So advice to younger self. I guess this sort of thing links back to that Dr. Seuss quote, is that be you, in that I think that if I was to speak to 15-year-old me, it would be to say be you and be confident in being you. As I mentioned earlier, I had a lot of struggles with sort of self-confidence and self-belief at times. I know that that doesn't always come across, because I sort of have this persona of being outgoing and quite upfront and lively and bubbly. But sometimes you sort of have so many various self-doubts. And yes. I think that that harbored itself quite a lot with me for numerous reasons. Number one, you might sort of identify a bit with this, Chris, because you're in the world of acting and performance too. But I loved drama, and I did a drama degree at university, and I spent my whole time basically playing other characters rather than being myself. Not just, of course, when I was acting, but I sort of found myself trying to be that showman at all occasions, to try and be big bravado all the time. And sometimes that wasn't me, and I just needed to sort of have a bit of a reality check. And the other thing was that I struggled with my sexuality up until even to sort of last year, when I sort of came out publicly as a bisexual man. And so I always found myself hiding away bits of myself. And I think that if I was to give advice to younger me, it would be to be you, be honest, and be true to who you are, because people love you for that. And so sometimes you've just got to bite the bullet and go for it, and be yourself, no matter how much you doubt what that might mean or what that might entail or what how that might impact you. You just got to get on and do it, because actually people will love you for it.
And if I may, you have a very profound pinned tweet. So when people look at the Adam Crowther Twitter account, you've got a pinned tweet about your decision to identify as bisexual, which is, you know, I was hoping you might mention that, because it was a very profound thing I noticed.
Yeah, and I really struggled to come out like that, because I think there's twofold. Is that one, I do a very public job. So there's a lot of people follow me that on social media that follow me because of the fact that I'm on the radio. So they are audience, if you like, as opposed to those true close friends that I know because they are the friends that I associate with, etc. So I sort of struggled with whether I should do a post like that. And I thought, well, to heck, if I'm going to be honest with my friends, I may as well be honest with my audience too, because they're an extension of my friends and family. So I thought I may as well just go for it. But never have I hesitated over posting something like I did like that in all my life. It was such a nervous decision, but I'm so glad I did, because I posted it on all of my social media platforms, and the response that I had from every single person that commented was so warm and so welcoming. And some of the people who I least expected to not be supportive, because I knew that most people would be, I guess, but to the people that I didn't think would reach out and give me a pat on the back did. And so that was a really nice emotional but nice day for me to be able to do that. And I realized that I didn't come out until I was 33, so it's quite late on in life, really. But I realized that not everyone is in the privileged position to be able to do what I did, for various different reasons. Coming out is never easy for anyone. But yeah, I'm glad that I did it. And it's one of those things that I'm sort of, again, pat myself on the back for doing, because it was no easy thing to do.
And if I may, it was bold, brave, majestic, and truly authentic. And wisdom is being at ease with oneself. And as you've already said, in other ways, but be yourself, because everyone else is taken.
Yes, true. No one else alive that is youer than you. So, yeah, embrace it.
And then we are now at the Shakespeare and legacy, and how, Adam Crowther, you'd most like to be remembered.
Wow. Again, this is a real interesting one for me, going back through all that blinking self-confidence stuff again, isn't it? But I think I'd like to be remembered as someone who gave it a good old go, you know, someone who was able to do their best no matter what they had thrown at them, but also to be that person who enabled other people to shine too, because that's been my ethos as a broadcaster, as a presenter, as a friend, is that I want to be able to provide spaces for people to thrive, whether that be to tell their story, to showcase their talent, to sort of experiment with doing new stuff with their creativity. And so, yeah, I think I'd like to be remembered as someone who gave people a chance as well as giving themselves a chance sometimes too.
Lovely. Thank you for that. And where can we find out more about you on the old hinterweb?
Yeah, search out Adam Crowther, BBC Upload. I should come up. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, at Adam_Crowther. And my website is adam-crowther.co.uk. And if you've listened to this and thinking, I want to send stuff in to get featured on the radio, then Upload is a resource, as Chris mentioned, right the way across England, Scotland, Wales, Channel Islands, and all the information that you need on how to record yourself and all that sort of stuff and how to actually send stuff into us is bbc.co.uk/upload.
As this has been your moment in the sunshine, Adam Crowther, and by the way, sincerely, thank you for saying yes. It's been a real joy talking to you. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Not overly, just that I would really like to thank you for inviting me on to this, Chris, because it's been a brilliant opportunity to be able to share some stories that not everyone gets to hear about. So yeah, hopefully people will have taken some stuff away and perhaps discovered a bit more about me and what I do. So thank you.
You're very welcome. So ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to me and Adam Crowther here in the Good Listening To show. Until next week, and good night.
You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.